chapter 8 of 2 Chronicles begins by saying, "And it came to pass at the end of 20 years wherein Solomon had built the house of the Lord and his own house." Now, his first 20 years in office, he spent 7 years building the temple and 13 years building his own house. We're about 1,000 years before Christ at this point in time, and certainly it's an interesting time in history. Solomon, as it were, sitting on top of the world in regards to power and finances and so forth. At the end of that 20 years of building, it says that the cities which Huram had restored to Solomon, Solomon built them and caused the children of Israel to dwell there. He had given them as a gift to Hiram from some of his labor. Hiram disapproved of them. Solomon took them back and restored them. And Solomon went to Hamath-Zobah and prevailed against it. Now, this is about 300 miles north of Jerusalem. It's the only offensive campaign we see during the entire reign of Solomon. Evidently, Hamath had rebelled against Zobah, which was part of Solomon's alliances, and he enters in to secure this situation. So he goes to Hamath-Zobah, prevailed against it, and he built Tadmor in the wilderness and all the store cities which he built in Hamath, securing that northern border. And he built also Beth-horon, the upper, and Beth-horon, the nether, the lower Beth-horon, fence cities with walls, gates, and bars. About 10 miles north of Jerusalem, if you've been to Jerusalem, and you will be someday, of course the topography will change by then, but if you've been there, you know that on Jerusalem's eastern side is the Kidron Valley, which gives a wonderful natural defense system. On Jerusalem's southern and then to the western side is the Valley of Hinnom that does the same thing. Jerusalem's weak side was always the northern side. So because of that, Solomon wisely builds up Beth-horon, makes a fortress on the northern side of Jerusalem. And Baalath and all the store cities that Solomon had and all the chariot cities and the cities of horsemen, all that Solomon desired to do, to build in Jerusalem and in Lebanon throughout all the land of his dominion. Now look, all that he desired to build. I like the way that sounds. I can't imagine being in that position. I would love to be able to build all that I desire to build. I'd probably get in a world of trouble if I could, but love to be able to do that. You know, to build a conference center here, to build an inner city ministry, be able to build whatever you want to build. I kind of like the way that sounds. But Solomon is in this strange position now of the greatest feat of his reign was building the temple, which is glorious. He's built his own house of cedar from Lebanon. It took him 13 years to do that. Now he's securing a minor uprising. He secures then Beth-horon as far as building it as a fortress to defend Jerusalem's northern border. He's looking for things to do. He fortifies Hazor, and that doesn't mention them here, Megiddo, and a number of other cities to be chariot cities, to keep his horses and his chariots. When you go to Hazor and Megiddo today, the gates to the cities are built in a very specific way, and we know that Solomon did it. The way he built his gates, looks like the inside of a big old-fashioned lock where you would turn the key, because you go inside the gate, and then there are little cubicles in the wall. Then you go a little further, little cubicles again. You go a little further, little cubicles again, where he would put archers and warriors so that if you tried to come into the city through the gates, you couldn't fire at them because you couldn't see them, but it was almost impossible to get into the city. He fortified the cities, and all of Solomon's construction is still standing in some of these places. A wise man. Remember, he asked God for wisdom to govern his people. God granted that and said, because you didn't ask for the neck of your enemies, you didn't ask for riches and so forth, I'll grant you the wisdom you asked for, but I'm going to grant you all of those other things too. But he's interesting to watch because he didn't ask for a heart that would love God. like David his father had. And the heart is the compass of the human being, not the intellect, not wisdom, but desire, longing. And we watch Solomon here. He's done the Lord's house. He's done his own house. He's securing minor cities, putting down a skirmish. Now he's fortifying cities. He's building. And then it says, Solomon, he built all that he desired to build in Jerusalem and in Lebanon throughout all the land of his dominion. Whatever he wanted to build, he had done it. And as for all the people that were left of the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and of the Hivites and the Jebusites, which were not of Israel, any of the tribes that hadn't been exterminated, that were still the remnants of them, Solomon used them for labor. But of their children who were left after them in the land, whom the children of Israel consumed not, them did Solomon make to pay tribute until this day. They would pay taxes, they would be put to labor. But of the children of Israel did Solomon make no servants for his work, but they were men of war, and chief of his captains, and captains of his chariots and horsemen. And these were the chief of King Solomon's officers, even 250 that bear rule over the people. So there were 250 main officers that were ruling over everyone. And Solomon brought up the daughter of Pharaoh out of the city of David unto the house that he had built for her. For he said, my wife shall not dwell in the house of David, king of Israel, because the places are holy whereunto the ark of the Lord hath come. Now, Solomon is soothing his conscience here. Now, we talked about this morning. We say, Lord, speak to my heart. But do we really want that to happen? Solomon here somehow ends up married to Pharaoh's daughter. One of the prohibitions in the law for a king, multiplying wives to himself. Solomon, of course, will end up with 700 wives and 300 concubines. And again, that's a lot of mother-in-laws. Being under some conviction, he says, now he had finished his own house up in Jerusalem, north of the city of David, which is Zion, Jebus. And he said, I'm going to move Pharaoh's daughter out of the house that David was in because my father David had brought the ark up in conjunction. It was there pitched right next to his house, and those places are holy. And because of that, I'm going to move her out of there. Well, Solomon, that should be a dead giveaway. If you're married to a woman that you can't take around a place that honors your God, you shouldn't be married to her in the first place. And what he does is he makes these compromises. He begins to make these allowances. He has power to build whatever he wants to build. He has money to build whatever he wants to build. And everything's subdued around him. There isn't anything that's being restrained to him. God's given him wisdom. God continues, because of his wisdom, to pile money on top of money on top of money, and territory on top of territory on top of territory. And there's no limit to what Solomon can do. There's no restraint to it. He's done so many wonderful and incredible things that somehow I think he's failing in his strength. He's failing in his wisdom. He's failing believing his own press clippings, as it were. And increment by increment, that's how the enemy loves to take territory from us in our hearts. Not anything so obvious that we would say, oh, I would never fall for that. But increment by increment. Solomon, what are you saying? Those places are holy, and because of that, I'm going to move Pharaoh's daughter out of there, and I'll put her up in the house that I've made. And then look in verse 12. Then Solomon offered burnt offerings unto the Lord on the altar of the Lord, which he had built before the porch, even after a certain rate every day, offering according to the commandment of Moses on the Sabbaths and on the new moons, on the solemn feast, three times in a year, even in the Feast of Unleavened Bread and in the Feast of Weeks and in the Feast of Tabernacles. Interesting, it tags it on there. He moved this wife out of David's house because the places were holy, and in this little bit of compromise there, and then it says he goes right back and he does all of these religious things. He's used to this religious system. He said, this is what the commandment says, what the law says. I have the money. I can offer sacrifice after sacrifice after sacrifice after sacrifice. Not remembering somewhere, I'm sure his father had told him that, do I delight in sacrifice and offering? is that a broken and a contrite heart, God had delighted. To obey, David had learned from Samuel, is better than sacrifice. To hearken, better than the fat of rams. Tells us all of his offerings. Verse 14, he appointed, according to the order of David his father, the courses of the priests to their service, the Levites to their charges, to praise and to minister before the priest, as the duty of every day required, the porters also by their courses at every gate. For so had David the man of God commanded. Notice David the man of God. And they departed not from the commandment of the king unto the priest and the Levites concerning any matter or concerning the treasures. Now all the works of Solomon were prepared unto the day of the foundation of the house of the Lord. And until it was finished, so the house of the Lord was perfected. Then went Solomon to Ezion-Geber and to Elat. That's a modern day Elat on the right finger of the Red Sea, at the seaside, and in the land of Edom. There he refined copper and iron from that area, traded with Arabia. Beautiful place. And Hiram sent him by the hands of his servants ships and servants that had knowledge of the sea, and they went with the servants of Solomon to Ophir, and took from there 450 talents of gold, and brought them to King Solomon. That's 17 tons, 34,000 pounds of gold from Ophir, which is probably an area in Saudi Arabia today. So Solomon, now we're going to find, is the first king of Israel who establishes a navy. He has this help of Hiram, we're going to see as we move on. He has a fleet that sails from the Mediterranean. He has a fleet that sails from the Red Sea out into the Indian Ocean and into the Persian Gulf, into that area of the world. And the first king that does that. Everything's secure. He gets involved in commerce. It's interesting. Here it tells us that in 1 year he gathered 450 talents of gold. It tells us that David, by conquest, gathered 100,000 talents of gold. This is 450 talents of gold by commerce. David, by conquest, gathered at one time 100,000 talents of gold by conquest. Solomon, by commerce. Seems like a large amount, but not compared to what his father David had gathered by the victories of the Lord that he was involved in. Now, when the queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon, she came to prove Solomon with hard questions at Jerusalem. Now, the queen of Sheba, some say, we're going to see that it says that Solomon granted to the queen of Sheba all of her heart's desire. Of course, in Ethiopia, Haile Selassie claimed that the queen of Sheba was from Ethiopia. And she had come and fallen in love with Solomon, and that Solomon granted her all of her heart's desire, and that part of her heart's desire was to leave Jerusalem pregnant to bear one of Solomon's sons. And that Solomon, knowing one day Israel would go into apostasy, had his craftsmen make a copy of the Ark of the Covenant, which he kept at Jerusalem. And of course, their tradition is sent the real Ark of the Covenant to Ethiopia with the Queen of Sheba, where it remains to this day. And it's one of the traditions of the Ark. I don't personally necessarily believe that. You can believe that if you want to, or whatever it is, it's fine with me. But that is one of the traditions, that is her origin. The other tradition is, and I think that is correct, that she's from the area of Saudi Arabia, the Queen of Sheba. Solomon now is sending ships, having trade with that part of the world, bringing gold in tremendous amounts from Ophir. She hears of Solomon, no doubt by these trade routes that are being established. And she heard of his splendor. Just think of the things that she heard. She's 12 to 1,500 miles away. And this is an era without television, without radio, without print. She hears, there's this king, this young man. He's the wisest man that's ever lived. He's the richest man that's ever lived. He's the most powerful man who's ever lived. The temple of his God is in the city that he lives in, and his God manifests himself so that the glory of his God shines out the door of his temple. His God rains down fire from heaven to consume the sacrifices on the altar. Just think of the things that she had heard of Solomon. It says, when the queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon, she came to prove Solomon with hard questions at Jerusalem, with a very great company and camels that bear spices and gold in abundance and precious stones. And when she was come to Solomon, she communed with him of all that was in her heart. How would you like to have done that? Like to go in a time machine and back 3,000 years, go to Jerusalem while Solomon's on the throne, and be able to sit there and test him. How'd you like to put him on that show, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? It wouldn't mean anything to him. Let's see if he's the wisest man that ever lived. Would you like to sit with him face to face in a coffee shop and talk to him for 8 or 9 hours? Jesus said this in Matthew, the queen of the south, the queen of Sheba, shall rise up in judgment with this generation and shall condemn it, for she came from the uttermost parts of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon, and behold, a greater than Solomon is here. The Bible says to us in James, if any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who giveth to all men liberally, and yet with nothing doubting, because he that doubts is like a wave of the sea that's driven and tossed by the wind. Let not such a man think that he'll receive anything of God. The Queen of Sheba went to sit with Solomon. You know, remarkably, you and I have the freedom to go sit in the presence whenever we want of the greater than Solomon. But I wanted to watch the end of the Sixers game today. And in my own sermon this morning, you know, come aside right now, but Lord, the Raptors are too close. I have to pray here, Lord, for the Sixers. You know, aren't we like that? And here it says that we have access to him, a greater than Solomon, to go and to sit in his presence, to ask wisdom of him, not just for him to answer our questions, but for him to impart wisdom to us. And Solomon told her all her questions. He answered any question that she came to him with. And there was nothing hid from Solomon which he told her not. When the queen of Sheba had seen the wisdom of Solomon, and the house that he had built, and the food of his table, and the sitting of his servants, and the attendance of his ministers, and their apparel, and his cupbearers also, and their apparel, and his ascent by which he went up to the house of the Lord, there was no more spirit in her. She fainted when she saw his wisdom, and saw his home, and saw his cupbearers and his servants, and saw the grandeur of their clothing, and saw the way he had made from his own palace to go up to the temple to worship, how glorious even the steps were that ascended. When she saw the way that his table was set, it says, there was not even any breath left in her. 1 Kings give us a little glimpse at his table. It says Solomon's provision for one day, it gives you an idea what she was impressed with, were 30 measures of fine flour. That's 10 bushels, 2 loaves a person for 1,100 people a day, or 2,200 loaves of bread a day. 60 measures of meal, that's 600 bushels of meal, 10 fat oxen, conservatively for 1,400 people, that's a pound and a half of meat today, a day we're going to read about here, that's 10 fat oxen, 20 oxen out of the pastures. I guess they're not so fat oxen, regular oxen. 100 sheep, besides harts and roebucks, fallow deer, and fatted fowl, probably geese. For he had dominion over all the region on this side and on that side of the river. That's his table for one day. Sounds extravagant. With Solomon, it wasn't extravagant because of the amount, which sounds extravagant to us. It was extravagant because of his waiters, because of his cupbearers, because of all of the cups they drank out of were pure gold, because of the way that things were done. She was amazed. Cyrus, we're told, his daily provision. Try to imagine this. This is at King Cyrus. This is his table every day. 400 sheep, 300 lambs, 100 oxen, 30 horses, 30 deer, 400 geese, 100 young geese, 300 pigeons, 600 small fowl, 3,750 gallons of wine, 75 gallons of new milk, and 75 gallons of sour milk. Who cooked that? And how big was that kitchen? 400 sheep, 300 lambs, 100 oxen, 30 horses. Where did they make that? How many ovens did they have? Well, when she came and saw what was taking place in Solomon's palace and in his courts, it says there was no more spirit, and she near fainted. And she said to the king, "It was a true report which I heard in mine own land of thine acts and of thine wisdom." Now look, here's the interesting thing. When people hear about you, what is it that they hear? Solomon, his reign, his kingdom, the temple, the priesthood, was all to be a light and a testimony to the heathen nations of the world. They were supposed to come from their homelands to Jerusalem and say, what people on the earth has there ever been like this? God tells us in Deuteronomy that the true and living God saved out of the land of Egypt, redeemed them to himself, gave them precepts such as these and ordinances. Where in the history of the world has there ever been a people? And you think of ancient cultures where they were sacrificing humans and cutting hearts out of people, and you read, where has there ever been a people where the living God has set aside a people and said, I want you to live in integrity, I want you to have character, I want one man to be committed to one wife, I want you to raise your children this way, I want you to teach them this, there is to be no stealing, there is to be no lying, there is to be just weights and balances, there is to be true worship. You know, where was that ever seen before? And here's Solomon, the fame of him is now gone, going out throughout the whole world. But what people are hearing is, he's rich. He's wise. Well, they're hearing that there's a temple there, and there's a God there. But Solomon stands in that interesting position of communicating to the rest of the world the truth in regards to the living God. And we're going to see that, you know, how he gets off path. I heard of thee in mine own land, of thy wisdom, howbeit I believe not their words, until I came, and mine eyes had seen it, and behold, the one half of the greatness of thy wisdom was not told me. I didn't hear the half of it, she said, for thou exceedest the fame that I heard of. Happy are thy men, and happy are these thy servants, which stand continually before thee to hear thy wisdom. Blessed be the Lord thy God, which delighteth in thee, to set thee on this throne. Notice she knows more about Solomon, even in his relationship with the Lord. To set thee on this throne, to be king for the Lord thy God, because thy God loved Israel, to establish them forever. Therefore made he thee king over them, to do judgment and to do justice. And she gave the king 120 talents of gold. Now that's over $4 million worth of, over 4.5 tons of gold. That's a nice present from somebody who comes to visit. And of spices, great abundance, and precious stones, neither was there any such spice as the Queen of Sheba gave to King Solomon. It had never been seen before, the amount of spice that she brought. And the servants also of Hiram and the servants of Solomon, which brought gold from Ophir, brought algum trees and precious stones. And the king made of the algum trees terraces to the house of the Lord, notice, and to the king's palace, and harps and psalteries for the singers. And there was none such seen before in the land of Judah. Now notice, he has this most remarkable wood, algum here, possibly sandalwood. We're not sure what kind of wood it is, but it's evidently some kind of a beautiful hardwood. Solomon makes terraces around the house of God, the temple, with this beautiful wood. He makes psalteries, makes harps, but then he also builds terraces on his house. Imagine framing a deck out of the most beautiful hardwood anybody can find in the world, how the extravagance we're beginning to see here. And King Solomon gave to the queen of Sheba all her desire. Now that's where they get their tradition from. Whatsoever she asked, beside that which she had brought unto the king, so she turned and went away to her own land, she and her servants. Now, interesting fact. The weight of the gold that came to Solomon in 1 year was 666 talents. 666. So this is the only place you find it in the scripture, you know, besides Revelation chapter 13. No, you know, if I'm King Solomon, I'm changing it to 766. Can't we bump this up a little? I get a little bit of the heebie-jeebies here, or even 566 if I have to suffer. 666 talents of gold. I wonder why it tells us that. It's over $1 billion worth of gold comes to him every year of his own salary, his own money. Over $1 billion worth of gold. Again, imagine what that means. What do you do with that? We mentioned a couple of weeks ago, if you take $1 billion bills and lay them end to end, you go around the earth 350,000 times. You take $1 billion, a dollar at a time, and you start to count them the day that you're born. I heard somebody else say this. I don't have fun facts on $1 billion or something in them, but if you take $1 billion bills and you start to count them the day you're born, and you count them all day, every day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you never take a rest, it will take you until you're 75 years old to count through $1 billion. If you want to spend $1 billion, and we'd all like to try, I know, you can spend $1,000 a day for 3,000 years. Or if you want to splurge, you can spend $3,000 a day for 1,000 years. Or if you really want to be a splurge, you can spend $30,000 a day for 100 years. $30,000 a day, every day, 7 days a week, for 100 years. Well, he's getting 666 talents of gold year in and year out are coming to this man. What do you do with that? You'd like to find out, wouldn't you? Just try. I just want to try. Yeah, just one day. So let me try. I know I don't worship mammon, but I just want to see how he felt so I can appreciate Solomon's predicament. So it's just a week of that stuff. It says, besides that, no, that's besides, verse 14, that which the chapmen and merchants, he had officers evidently in charge of tolls, besides what they brought, all the kings of Arabia and the governors of the country. Now what had happened, they brought gold and silver to Solomon. That right at this time, about 1,000 years before Christ, is when camels become domesticated. And because they domesticate camels right at this time, trade routes open between Egypt and Mesopotamia that weren't way long out of the way. It was more of a straight route, but that trade route went through Israel. So Solomon set up cities on toll roads, and he collected incredible amounts of tolls from these trade routes that were taking place going through Israel, the Via Maris, the Way of the Kings, even coming from the north down from above Syria down into northern Africa through the middle of Israel. So besides his over $1 billion a year worth of gold, 600, 66 talents, besides that were the tolls and the things that he gathered there that he brought. And King Solomon made 200 targets of beaten gold. Now, that's 200 large shields, like you're in a battle, a large shield that would cover your whole body, of gold. 600 shekels of beaten gold went into each one of these targets. And 300 shields, these are the smaller round shields, made he of beaten gold. 300 shekels of gold went into each shield, and the king put them in the house of the forest of Lebanon. You know, I think these would be nice ornaments. I get tired of paintings. I get tired of, you know, plants. Let's make 300 shields of pure gold and hang them around in my hunting room there in the house in Lebanon. These were ornaments. These were not for war. These were decorations to put on the walls of his house. Moreover, the king made a great throne of ivory. And then he overlaid it with pure gold. And our word ivory here is elephant tooth, by the way. We're talking about tusks. The animal rights activist would be having heart attacks here. He made a huge throne of pure ivory. And then he overlaid it with pure gold. And there were 6 steps to the throne. Isn't that interesting, the number of men? 666 talents of gold, 6 steps to this throne. With a footstool of gold, which were fastened to the throne, and stays on each side. Those are big arms. The arms on the throne that he put his hands on were big arms made of gold on each side of the sitting place, and 2 lions standing by the stay. So by the big arms of his throne, on either side of those were 2 lions sitting. Now, it's not told if they were made of pure gold or ivory, or if they're live lions. I would imagine I would want them sitting that close to me. And 12 lions stood there on the one side and upon the 6 steps, and there was not the like made in any kingdom. So the 6 steps that went down, each step had a lion on it kind of going out, so that there were 12 lions then sitting on the steps that went down to. And this was the approach to his throne, and it says there wasn't anything seen like in any kingdom. This is government spending, folks. This is unnecessary government spending. They could have been doing things in regards to God's work. They could have been doing things in regards to the population. They could have been doing things in regards to blessing the widow and the poor and so forth. Solomon here starts out so remarkably. It's almost heartbreaking to see the course of his life now. And all the drinking vessels of King Solomon were of gold. And all the vessels of the house of the forest of Lebanon were of pure gold. Glasses, knives, forks, plates, bowls, everything, pure gold. Don't want no sterling silver. Get that stuff out of here. None were of silver. So you thought I was kidding. It was not anything accounted in the days of Solomon. There was so much gold in the days of Solomon that silver was accounted as nothing. In fact, if you look over there in verse 27, it says, And the king made silver in Jerusalem as stones. Now, if you've been to Jerusalem and seen how many stones there are, that's a remarkable statement. Jerusalem is a stone. The whole hill it's on is made of stones. The whole place is stone. He made silver to be worthless, like stones. He gathered so much gold. Now, this is hard for us to imagine. All of the vessels in the house of Lebanon. Now, this house is not in Lebanon. It's called the house of Lebanon because it was built strictly with cedar trees from Lebanon. It's in Jerusalem. It's called the house of Lebanon because they had to move so much of Lebanon there to build the house. And all the vessels of pure gold, nothing of silver. And the king's ships, verse 21, went to Tarshish, with the servants of Hiram. Every 3 years, once came the ships of Tarshish, bringing gold and silver, ivory, apes, and peacocks. This is a bored man. He's got one fleet of ships going out of Eilat, the Red Sea. He's got another fleet of ships going out Tarshish. No one is exactly sure where Tarshish is. It seems to be around Gibraltar, out into the North Atlantic from the Mediterranean. Some feel that it's Britain. No one's sure exactly. It's hard to be dogmatic. But whatever that circuit is, it's a year and a half out and a year and a half back. That's a long journey. And I don't know, if I was those guys, I'd have picked up the apes and the peacocks right at the end before I got back. I wouldn't have picked them up on the way out and have to take care of them for 2 years on the ocean. They'd be going overboard or in the frying pan or something. Every 3 years, these ships are coming back with ivory, gold, silver, apes, and peacocks. Now, what do you do with apes and peacocks? You know, what it is there was no television in those days. There's no CD players, no internet. People come over your house, they want entertainment. Let's go mess around with the apes. They'll blow your mind. The apes and the peacocks. Now, that's kind of like television today, isn't it? Really, most of what we see on TV can be put in one of those categories, apes or peacocks. They're either brutes or they're prancing around all dressed up and putting on some show. So things haven't changed a whole lot. Fills his house with apes and peacocks. Come on, Solomon, let's do something else with this wealth and wisdom God's given you. You know, this is beginning to stand in contrast with a father who said, "One thing have I desired of the Lord, and that will I seek after, that I might enter into the house of the Lord, that I might behold his beauty, that I might be in his presence." David said, "That's my heart. Above every other treasure of this world, anything that anybody could put in front of me, that's the thing. As the deer panteth after the water brook, so panteth my soul after thee, O Lord. I will be satisfied when I awake in thy likeness, O God." What a contrast to Solomon. I can't imagine David spending money on apes and peacocks. Well, what did he do? Did he have cages for them? I mean, just try to imagine. I can't imagine bringing home apes and peacocks with one wife. How this guy got away with it with 700 wives, I'll never understand. And King Solomon passed all the kings of the earth. This is what the Bible says. All of the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom. Notice what's first now. Riches and wisdom. When he was a young man, it was wisdom first. And as the years went by, riches were added. Now he's noted for riches, then wisdom. There's a decline. And all the kings of the earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom that God had put in his heart. Now notice that. God had placed it there. We know that. And the writer here makes that note. That all of the kings of the earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom. And the author says that God had put in his heart. And they brought every man his present, vessels of silver, vessels of gold, different types of clothing and harnesses, spices, horses, mules, a rate year by year. They're giving these things to Solomon, flowing in year after year at a particular rate. And Solomon had 4,000 stalls for horses and chariots, 12,000 horsemen whom he bestowed in the chariot cities and with the king at Jerusalem. And he reigned over all the kings, plural, from the river even into the land of the Philistines and to the border of Egypt. Now, Solomon has thrown to the wind God's instruction for the king in Israel. God had said in Deuteronomy 17, when you come into the land and you desire a king like the nations that are around you, surely that king must be one of your brethren, not a foreigner. But the king that you choose shall first not multiply wives unto himself. I don't know what kind of multiplication Solomon was used to. He can't think 700 wives is addition. Thou shalt not multiply wives to thyself. 700 wives. With 700 wives, Solomon, why do you need 300 concubines? 1,000 women. And he was not happy. I could have told him that. That is a dysfunctional family. Thou shalt not multiply wives to thyself. Thou shalt not multiply silver and gold to thyself. And thou shalt not go back to Egypt for horses. Thou shalt not multiply horses unto thyself. And Solomon has cast to the wind now God's instruction. And he has given himself to the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. That has been a consistent work of Satan since he came to Eve and showed her the tree that was forbidden. It was good to look upon, the lust of the eyes. It was good to the taste, the lust of the flesh. It was desired to make one wise, the pride of life. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. Thou shalt not multiply wives, the lust of the flesh. Thou shalt not multiply gold and silver, the lust of the eyes, all of the kingdoms of the world. Thou shalt not multiply horses, the pride of life. Some trust in horses. David, his father, would say, some trust in chariots. But we will remember the name of the Lord our God, harking all the way back to a song that Moses had written. And look, it's the same thing that Satan does to Christ in the wilderness. Censure the Son of God, and that's the class condition, it's not if. Censure the Son of God, turn these stones to bread, lust of the flesh. Took them up and showed them all of the kingdoms of the world and said, I'll give these to you if you'll bow down and worship me, the lust of the eyes. Cast yourself down from the temple, for it's written, his angels shall be given charge over thee. Make a grand entrance, you have the right, you're the Messiah, the pride of life. John would write, all that's in the world, the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is in the present condition of passing away. And it constantly seems to be the thing that takes a human being down. And again, I believe young, lust of the flesh, dominant out of the three. Midlife, lust of the eyes, older, the pride of life. No doubt all three of them always there in concert. Solomon has cast God's instruction to the wind and has set himself up now, stepped above the law of God. He had become so important and so great that the rules no longer applied. And that is always a trap. He reigned over all the kings, from the river even to the land of the Philistines and to the border of Egypt. And the king made silver in Jerusalem as stones, and cedar trees he made as the sycamores that are in the low plains in abundance. And they brought unto Solomon horses out of Egypt and out of all lands. Now, the rest of the acts of Solomon, isn't it interesting, because Chronicles is giving us a spiritual perspective on these things, how that the chronicler sews this up with giving us Solomon failing in these areas, and then he says, now the rest of the acts of Solomon, first and last, are they not written in the book of Nathan the prophet, and in the prophecy of Ahijah the Shilonite, and in the visions of Iddo the seer against Jeroboam the son of Nebat? And Solomon reigned in Jerusalem over all Israel for 40 years. And Solomon slept with his fathers, and he was buried in the city of David, his father, and Rehoboam, his son, reigned in his stead, who begins to destroy the kingdom. 700 wives, 300 concubines, we know the name of one of his children. This is a fouled life. David, his father, is a man who started with nothing, a harp and a slingshot. in the field with the sheep. David ended his life with everything. Oh, Solomon saw 450 talents of gold come in a year in his commerce. David saw over 100,000 talents at one instant just from conquest. David started with nothing but a heart for God, standing out in the fields, worshiping, singing praises, and David ended with everything. Solomon began with everything but a heart for God and ended up with nothing in the end. A failed life. One son, Rehoboam, a rebel. A failure. Read ahead. I encourage you. We start to move through these things. You know, it's interesting. I encourage you, if you read through the book of Proverbs, and you know, you can read a chapter a day and get through it once a month and just look at the things that are written there. Remember, most of them written by Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived, who violated everything that he wrote in the book of Proverbs. You know, he learned the things that he wrote. My son, you can hear David saying that, go not after the whorish woman. Don't give yourself to this. Don't give yourself to drunkenness. You know, you can hear that he had heard these things from David, his father. My son, I failed with one woman, Bathsheba. It left a stain on my entire life. My son, I made this mistake. You know, beat your son and save his soul from hell. David was such a failure as a father. You listen to the instruction in the book of Proverbs. And as you read through, remember, you know, Solomon is the one who writes there, you want to accumulate wealth? I'll tell you what it does. It takes wings and it flies away. You read the book of Ecclesiastes. Vanity of vanities. I filled my house with peacocks and monkeys. And musicians, and the best wine, and women. Vanity, vanity, is all is empty to me. In fact, he talks like he's a scientist. I gave myself to wine. It was an experiment. I gave myself to women. I gave myself to these things just to see if it was true that this was a waste of time. And it was. Vanity of vanities. And he says, and the thing that really stings as a man can work his entire life, accumulating wealth and then leave it to his son who's a fool. Vanity of vanities. My son, give yourself to God in the good days. Listen to his commandments. Serve him before the evil days come when you can no longer chew and your eyes don't work anymore and it's hard to hear and you're stooped over. When life loses its vitality and its pleasure. Because in the final analysis, Solomon would write, there's only one thing that matters, and that's to serve the living God and to keep his commandments. What a sad way to learn that. What a sad ending. A great man. What a warning for us. You know, in the New Testament, Jesus says, you know, that we shouldn't worry about what we're going to eat, what we're going to put on. That's half for men and half for women. Don't worry about what you're going to eat and what you're going to put on. Consider the sparrows. They don't sow, they don't gather into barns, and your Father who's in heaven takes care of them. Or consider the lilies of the field, which are here today and gone tomorrow, thrown in the oven. Even Solomon in all of his glory was not arrayed as one of these. All of these things do the nations of the world worry after and seek after. But your Father knows you have need and before you ask, so seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all of these things shall be added to you. We never hear Jesus speak of King Solomon, many times of King David, simply Solomon. Let's stand, let's pray, we'll have the musicians come. Worship. I hope you remember these things if you ever start making over $1 billion a year. You know, I like in Proverbs where it says, Lord, just give me enough so that I don't have to steal and I'm not tempted to become a thief. But don't give me so much that I'm not dependent on you anymore. That's kind of a good place to be.